Alarmed by drastic changes in the Earth's climate systems, Peter Kalmus, a climate scientist and suburban father of two, embarked on a journey to change his life and the world. He began by bicycling, growing food, meditating, and making other simple, fulfilling changes. Ultimately, he slashed his climate impact to under a tenth of the U.S. average and became happier in the process. Peter Kalmus is an atmospheric scientist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory with a Ph.D. in physics from Columbia University. The name of the book, Being the Change, Live Well and Spark a Climate Revolution. And it's a pleasure to welcome Peter Kalmus to the roundtable this morning. Peter, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
What brought you to this particular project?
You know, over a period of time, I was learning more and more about global warming, and I was reading more papers. At this time, this was back in 2006, I was a graduate student in physics at Columbia, and I was planning to be an astrophysicist. But, you know, then during a postdoc, an astrophysics postdoc at Caltech after I got my PhD, you know, I just was learning so much about the science of global warming and becoming very concerned. And then I realized I had to start, you know, aligning my life more along the lines of what my principles were saying, which was to stop burning fossil fuel. So I moved kind of radically away from fossil fuels over a period of a few years. And I also decided to switch fields from astrophysics to atmospheric science because I was spending so much time thinking about climate change and you know, atmospheric science anyway. So it made sense to make the switch. The book grew out of a realization as I was reducing my own emissions that I was actually feeling better about my life and I was feeling more satisfied. And, you know, the prevailing sort of sentiment at the time, and maybe still a lot today, was that, you know, if we give up fossil fuel, it would be like wearing a hair shirt and it would be a huge sacrifice. And that wasn't what I was experiencing. And I wasn't seeing that message being put out there very much. So the book kind of grew out of all of those things. And it's sort of a mixture of kind of my realizations going down that path.
The number here is living on one-tenth the fossil fuels. How did you arrive at that? Meaning, did you do the reduction and then figure out what that was, or did you come up with a number and figure out what you had to do to change to get to that number?
Right, the latter. So one of the first things I did when I realized that, you know, my daily actions in burning fossil fuels weren't aligned with my concern about global warming was to actually sit down and, you know, just go on the internet. It only took a few hours to make the basic estimates one night. And I just figured out how much CO2 was emitted by burning a gallon of gas, how much by flying in an airplane, you know, 1,000 miles, how much from using a therm of natural gas, a kilowatt of electricity, eating a certain diet. So, you know, just went on the internet and found that basic information as best I could. And then, you know, I had two major surprises that night. One was that my flying at that time, this was in 2010, was about 75% of my emissions. So it turned out I was burning about 20 metric tons of CO2 per year at that time, which is about the same as the U.S. average. But most of my emissions were coming from my flying. And then my second biggest source of emissions was from my diet. So I started working on those two things, and I started changing other things too. I started biking. And then over time, I refined the estimates. And you know, I tell all this in the book and explain how I arrived at my estimates for emissions, and you give a lot of, you know, sources for that.
And that is really fascinating in that you realize that things that you wouldn't think would be a reduction in fossil fuels are a reduction, or is a reduction in fossil fuels.
Yeah, I think it's hard to know how our daily lives connect to our emissions and connect to global warming until you actually sit down and run the numbers. So I walk readers through that process in the book. And then everyone's profile is going to be different. Everyone, you know, people live a wide variety of different ways. And so we emit in a wide variety of different ways. And so what worked for me in reducing my emissions might not work for everyone. But the place to start is to just understand what you're emitting.
In the omitting of that and really to come to a change in life, give us a timeline. Give us the time frame for you from start to finish to where you were comfortable and the goal that you had set for yourself, how long did that take?
Well, you know, I didn't really set a goal. It was more like I started to realize in a fairly deep way that burning fossil fuels was causing harm. It was harming other people. It was harming children and future people, and it was harming non-humans. And I didn't want to cause that harm. So my awareness of how I was emitting as I was going about my daily life and my desire not to cause harm sort of just gradually led me to think, this thing I'm doing right now, I'm eating a certain way I'm driving right now, and I don't want to do that because it's emitting fossil fuels. So what can I do to change that? And so I would just get kind of creative. And then over time, I tracked what my emissions were. And it took about maybe 3 or 4 years to reduce by about that factor of 10, maybe five years to get all the way down there. The biggest change was over the first 2 years as I ramped down my flying. And, you know, that was around the same time I switched into atmospheric science. So, you know, I was very fortunate living in California that the American Geophysical Union meeting had been for a long time in San Francisco. So that was the biggest meeting of the year. And every year I would go up to that and then go to regional conferences. So that sort of worked out. And then, you know, I did a lot of other things that, you know, most people wouldn't probably want to do. Like I changed my car to run on veggie oil, and that allowed us to make the trip to visit our parents in Illinois about once a year. So driving on veggie oil and camping in Utah along the way. And then sometimes we started taking the train to more recently to do that. So it sort of evolved one step at a time. And I would do things that I found, you know, that I enjoyed, that I found satisfying, and just, you know, one step at a time.
You have a chapter in the book titled Slow Travel. Talk to us a little bit about, you mentioned a bit about it a moment ago, but talk to us about slow travel and what that means.
Right. So when you start living without fossil fuel, you start to get closer to the land in lots of different ways. You know, one is with food production, and you become more grateful for food. But another one is with fuel and with travel. So, you know, when you're riding your bike instead of driving, you're more connected with the process of directly with the process of transportation, and you realize what it means to go 10 miles on a bicycle, and you're very aware of that process. And it's actually, for me at least, a very enjoyable process, but you're more connected, and you will tend to combine errands. You'll tend to go to local businesses because they're closer rather than the big box stores. So, you know, paying the least for something isn't necessarily your priority. It has a lot more to do with, you know, just getting there. So with slow travel too, you know, if you're flying, you're going into an airport security line, and then you kind of go in the plane and maybe plug into some movie, and then you land in another place. During slow travel, you know, you're sort of intimately tied to the land. Like when we drive in the vegetable mobile, you're maybe camping, you're sort of stopping and seeing the sights along the way. And, you know, when you get to your destination, I found one change was that, you know, when I was visiting my parents and my siblings in Chicago, you know, maybe for Christmas time, I would fight with them less. You know, I basically wouldn't fight with them. I was so grateful to be there. It sort of changed my perspective because, you know, the process, while enjoyable, was, you know, a little bit more challenging. And it took more planning and a little bit more muscle power, filtering a lot of vegetable oil. So there's more connection. You have to take a few more vacation days. But, you know, there's also more adventure and for me, maybe more satisfaction.
Well, that idea of satisfaction, yes. No telethons for you. This all seemed to come out quite joyful for you and your family.
Yeah, I think so. you know, my wife and I had, you know, early on, there were some, so we didn't agree on everything. We both agreed right away that biking was an amazing thing. And we kind of embraced that very quickly in our lives because it's enjoyable and it made us healthier. Some of the food things that I do, my wife Sharon wasn't exactly on the same wavelength with me. You know, I would, one of the things I do is veganism. So I developed a relationship with a local supermarket, and I take, you know, maybe they'll be throwing away food. So one night every 2 weeks I go and collect maybe 20 boxes of spoils that they're throwing away, and I'll transport that, and it ends up going to a local church. But my friend and I, who partner in doing that, we'll sort through that food and, you know, I'll go home with, you know, about two of those boxes to feed my family for those 2 weeks. And sometimes a lot of that food gets left on the counter, and maybe sometimes, you know, zucchinis get left on the counter. And you know, my wife, we had to come to an understanding where the counters had to stay very clear. So, you know, it's important, I think, when embarking on this kind of a process to keep it joyful, to do the things that you enjoy and to not push those things on another person, you know, maybe on your partner, and to let that person kind of discover the path him or herself. And, you know, maybe if you're doing things with a smile, you know, you might inspire people more than if you're kind of gritting your teeth, and you know, and you'll find it more sustainable too, I think. If it's something that you're doing out of guilt, and you know, you think you should be doing something, but you don't actually enjoy it, then it'll be very hard to sustain over the long term.
The subtitle of the book, Live Well and Spark a Climate Revolution. How do you believe that this could spark a revolution?
Well, that's a great question. So, you know, I don't do what I'm doing to kind of make a direct dent in this global problem of that we're facing. It's just such a huge problem. What I'm doing instead is trying to demonstrate what's possible, to demonstrate that it's possible to live with much less fossil fuel. And as the systems start to change and catch up with this kind of like individual action, it'll be easier to go all the way. But for now, reducing by a factor of 10 was pretty comfortable for my family and allows us to live a pretty normal suburban life. You know, so I'm trying to tell that story that, you know, it's possible to live a different way. It's maybe not less satisfying to live that way. It might be more satisfying. I hope people that are concerned about global warming try to do this themselves and see if they find that to be true, and to, you know, spread that message. And then there's also, I think, a very deep connection between individual action and collective action. So what I think we need now, our policymakers tend to follow us. So if we start to shift, and we start to shift the culture, and we start to demand meaningful climate action, then our individual actions will be increasingly coupled to collective action, to things like putting a price on carbon, you know, to the sort of this massive movement switching to solar and electric cars. So, you know, I think that this predicament of global warming, it pervades how our entire lives, how we do things. And it makes sense to start to transform ourselves. And once you start to change, then that can ripple out and have a larger effect on the larger system.
Peter Kalmus is an atmospheric scientist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory with a PhD in physics from Columbia University. He's also the author of the new book, Being the Change, Live Well and Spark a Climate Revolution. The book is published by New Society Publishers. Peter, thank you very much for joining us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks, Joe. I should say I'm speaking on my own behalf, and it was indeed a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Again, Peter Kalmus is the author of Being the Change. The book is published by New Society Publishers. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.